Shabbos Daf Mem Hei. So Reish Lakish asks Rabbi Yochanan, what would Rabbi Shimon say about wheat that was buried in the ground or eggs that you put under a hen? Because we know Rabbi Shimon is lenient with muksa, but does he only say that something would not be considered muksa when you didn't actively set it aside from being used for Shabbos? But here in these cases, when you actively set the thing aside, you put the egg under the hen, or you buried the wheat where you have no intention of using it over Shabbos, then Rabbi Shimon would say that would be muksa. Or does he say that there's no difference whether or not you set it aside from being used on Shabbos or you didn't? Either way, it's not going to be muksa. Rabbi Yochanan answers that according to Reish Lakish, nothing is going to be muksa that you set aside for using on Shabbos except for oil that's in a burning lamp because of two factors. Since you set it aside for the mitzvah of Shabbos candles, it's going to be muksa. And the second factor is that since there's the isser of extinguishing the flame, therefore it's also going to be muksa because it's housing, it's part of this isser. However, is it true that we need both of these factors, like Rabbi Yochanan is saying, for Rabbi Shimon to say that something is muksa? But we know that Rabbi Shimon would say that just by having something set aside for a mitzvah would make it muksa, because there's a brisa that says if you put up schach on your sukkah and then you decorate your sukkah with all these different things, you can't use them or move them until after sukkahs, unless you made any stipulations, because then it's going to go by your stipulations. And how do we know this brisa is Rabbi Shimon? Well, that's because Rabbi Chiya bar Rabbi Yosef taught a brisa to Rabbi Yochanan that says that you are not allowed to detach wood from a hut on Yontiv, except for the pieces on the side, which aren't actively like supporting the hut. Those you could take aside, those you could take away, but Reb Shimon says it's mutter to detach any wood from a hut, but they both agree that on Sukkos, when we're dealing with the wood of a sukkah, that's going to be usser unless you made a stipulation. So we see from here that even Reb Shimon says that when it comes to a sukkah, you're not allowed to do anything with that. That's all going to be muksa. So how can that be? Because we only have one factor which is making this muksa. So why would Reb Shimon say that this is muksa? It seems from here that we don't need both factors, like Reb Yochanan was saying we needed both factors. So really this is what Reb Yochanan meant, that Reb Shimon says only things that are like the oil in a Shabbos lamp are going to be muksa. Since it was set aside for a mitzvah, then it's only going to be muksa as long as it's burning. So we only have the one factor, but that one factor is going to stay, that factor of being set aside for the mitzvah is going to stay, keep it muksa as long as it's burning. And so too, Reb Chiya bar Abba said in the name of Reb Yochanan that the only thing that's muksa when it's set aside for Shabbos use, according to Reb Shimon, are things like the oil in a Shabbos lamp, which is going to stay muksa as long as it is burning. Rav Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel that no food is muksa according to Reb Shimon in the case where you were eating figs and raisins before Shabbos, and then you decided that you were going to put them up on the roof so that they'd be able to dry out. So since you put them up on the roof before Shabbos, they were not fully dried when Shabbos comes. So since they're not edible, according to Reb Shimon, even those would be considered muksa because they have no purpose whatsoever, because you can't eat them or you can't do anything with them because they're in the process of drying. However, we have a braisa that says if you put figs and raisins up on the roof to dry, then you're not allowed to eat them unless you intended to eat them before Shabbos. And this also applies with peaches and quinces and all fruits. However, so who's this braisa going like? It's not going to be Reb Yehuda's opinion, because Reb Yehuda holds that by all you have to do to make something muksa is not to actively say and not to, you know, intentionally prepare something to be used for Shabbos. So in a case where something is, so obviously something's going to be muksa if you actively set it aside. Meaning, according to Reb Yehuda, all you have to do for something to be muksa on Shabbos is not say, this, I want to use this on Shabbos. If you don't say that, it's going to be muksa. So in a case where you actively put it up on the roof and you're showing you don't want to use it on Shabbos, then obviously it's going to be muksa. So why do we need this braisa to teach us that if it's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion? Rather, isn't this going like Rabbi Shimon's opinion? But the problem with that is that here, Rabbi Shimon says all fruits, according to Rabbi Shimon, all fruits would be muksa. So and that contradicts Rabbi Yehuda, who says in the name of Shmuel that it's only the drying figs and raisins. So rather, this braisa is really going like Rabbi Yehuda. And the reason we needed this braisa, even though it seems obvious, is because we need to explicitly teach that these fruits are going to be muksa, because since the person was eating the fruits before Shabbos, you might have thought that you don't need to, you know, redesignate them and say again that you want to have these for Shabbos, since you were planning to you started eating them, so it's clear that you want to eat the remainder of them. Rabbi Yehuda is therefore teaching us that since you took them up to the roof, you took your mind off of them, and they would require a new designation before Shabbos for them not to be muksa on Shabbos. Rabbi Shimon bar Rebbe asked his father Rebbe, does Rabbi Shimon hold that unripe dates would be considered muksa? And Rebbe answers that the only food that's muksa, according to Reb Shimon, are the figs and the raisins that are in the process of drying. So it seems like Rebbe holds like Reb Shimon. Based on the fact that his son asked him about Reb Shimon's opinion, and he answered for it, it seems like he holds like Reb Shimon. However, we have a Mishnah that says that you're not allowed to slaughter range animals on Yontif, but you are allowed to slaughter domestic animals on Yontif. And the Braisa explains that range animals are animals that go out at the end of the winter to graze, and then they come back at the beginning of winter. For the summer they're out, and at the beginning of winter they come back. And the domestic animals are the animals that go to graze beyond the Trom, which is 2,000 amos away from the city lines. So they go out to graze beyond that, but then they come back at night. And the reason there's the distinction of what you're allowed to shecht is because of the domestic animals. We assume, you know, you might have had your mind on them that you'd want to shecht them because they're, you know, they come back and forth. But the range animals, which you assume are not coming back at all, you would not have thought about them to shecht them. So that is why they're muksa. However, Rebbe argues with this in the Braisa. He says both these are cases of domestic animals. Range animals are animals that go out to graze and never come back, either in the summer or the winter. But we see from here that by giving the definition for the Mishnah, which says that the animals are muksa, it seems like he's agreeing that they are muksa, and he's agreeing with Rabbi Yehuda. So how does that make sense? Because it seemed like Rabbi holds like Rabbi Shimon. So we bring in a few answers. The first is that really the range animals are like the case of the dried figs and that even and the raisins, and even according to Rabbi Shimon, he would say they're muksa. So this is still in line with Rabbi Shimon's opinion. Or Rabbi Shimon bar Rebbe was just asking his father about Rabbi Shimon, was just asking Rebbe, his father, about Rabbi Shimon's opinion, but Rebbe doesn't actually agree with Rabbi Shimon. Or the third answer is that really still Rebbe does agree with Rabbi Shimon, but he was just arguing with the Tana Kama in the Braisa. And this is what he means to say. Rebbe was saying, I don't agree that they're muksa, that these animals, but even you should agree with me that if they graze in the summer and come back in the winter, then that would be that would constitute a domestic animal. However, the Tana Kama holds, no, that's still a range animal. So Rebbe would still agree with Rabbi Shimon. He's just arguing over the classification of what's a range or a domestic animal. Rabbi Bar Chana says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. However, that doesn't make sense that Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Shimon, because there was an elder from Kruya who asked Rabbi Yochanan, are you allowed to move a chicken coop on Shabbos? And Rabbi Yochanan answered, no, you're not allowed to, because it was only designated for the chickens, so therefore it's going to be muksa. So we see here that Rabbi Yochanan is being very strict with muksa, and he seems to be going like Rabbi Yehuda. So how can Rabbi Yochanan say that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon if we see he's going like Rabbi Yehuda? Rather, it's because the reason he didn't allow them to move the chicken coop is because there was a dead chicken inside, and even according to Rabbi Shimon, that would be muksa. However, this is a good explanation for Mar Bar Maremar, who says in the name of Rava, that Rabbi Shimon agrees that a dead animal becomes muksa. But according to Mar Bar Rav Yosef, who says in the name of Rava, that according to Rabbi Shimon, a dead animal would not be muksa, then you should be allowed to move the chicken coop. So what would Mar Bar Rav Yosef explain as to why you can't move the chicken coop? He would say that's because there's a newly laid egg in the coop, and since there's this newly laid egg that was laid on Shabbos or Yom Tov, then it's going to become muksa, and even according to Rav Shimon, it would be muksa. However, according to what Rav Nachman says, only Rav Meir says that a newly laid egg in a coop is going to be muksa. Rav Shimon would not say that a newly laid egg in a coop is muksa. So according to Rav Nachman, how do we explain why, according to Rav Shimon, this coop is going to be muksa? It's because there was an unhatched egg which had a chicken side. Because since there's a chicken side, no humans are going to eat it. And since it's still in the egg, no animals are going to eat it. So since it's utterly useless on Shabbos, even Rav Shimon would agree that it's muksa. Rav Yitzchak bar Rav Yosef says in the name of Rav Yochanan, says that Rav Yochanan says halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. And Rav Yosef says, oh, so this must have been what Rabbi Bar Chana meant when he said that Rabbi Yochanan says they said the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yochanan was saying they, meaning Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, and others say that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. But I, Rabbi Yochanan, hold the halacha is not like Rabbi Shimon, rather the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Abaye asks Rabbi Yosef, it's only now that Rav Yitzchak bar Rav Yosef made his statement that you realize that Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Why, it's so obvious that Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Yehuda, because we have this story with Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Asi who went to Rabbi Abba de Min Chaifa, and there was a candelabra that fell on Rav Asi's cloak, and they wouldn't move it. So isn't the reason that they didn't move it because Rav Asi was the student of Rav Yochanan, and Rav Yochanan holds like Rabbi Yehuda, who is strict with muksa? So why do you need Rav Yitzchak bar Rav Yosef to come and say that Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Yehuda? We see here from this story that it's so clear and obvious that Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Rav Yosef answers, the reason I couldn't learn from that story is because a candelabra is different. Even Rabbi Shimon would agree that a candelabra is muksa, because Rav Asi says that Rav Lakish ruled a candelabra that you can move with one hand, a small one, is not going to be muksa. However, if you need two hands to move it, it's a larger one then that is going to be muksa. But Rav Yochanan says, no, that's not true. You can only move a used lamp, like we saw Rav Shimon says that you can move a used lamp. However, anytime you have a candelabra, whether it's big or small, you need one or two hands to carry it, it's always is going to be muksa. So why is a candelabra? And he says, and Rabbi Yosef is saying, so we see from here that a candelabra is different, and that's why I couldn't learn from there. I needed Rabbi Yitzchak or Rabbi Yosef to teach me that Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Yehuda. So the Gemara asks, why is a candelabra muksa? What's so different about it? Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef says it's because you designated it for a specific place that you're not planning to ever, it's not meant to ever be moved on Shabbos, so that's why it's going to be muksa. However, Abai questions this because we know that a bridal canopy that you set, that has a set place for it, right? There's a set place for the bridal canopy. However, Abchia says that you could spread it or take it down, which seems to say that it's not muksa. However, it has a set place. So that doesn't make sense. So we answer that we're talking about, we're talking about a candelabra that has grooves, and therefore it's, we're dealing with a candelabra that's made out of sections, and if it breaks, then it, sorry, if it falls, it will break. So since it's made out of all these sections, it can break very easily, and therefore, we're worried that you might come to pick it up. The Chacham didn't want you to pick it up, and then it would, you might drop it because they're heavy, and then it's going to break and fall apart, and then you might come to put it back together. However, why then, if that's true, would Reish Lakish allow you to move even a small one? It seems like all candelabras should not be allowed. So it's because we're talking about a candelabra that has grooves, meaning that it appears like it has sections, but it's not actually one that has sections, it just appears like it has sections. And the bottom line is that both Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan agree that you're not allowed to move a candelabra that has sections, and whether it's big or small, and they both agree that you can't move a large candelabra that has grooves, because people might see it and think that it has sections. So anytime it has grooves or it's large, you are not allowed to move it. They argue in that Reish Lakish allows you to move a small candelabra that has grooves, but Rabbi Yochanan still says you can't move a small one, even if it has a grooved one, even if it's small, you still can't move that. Shkech.